promoting scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. Were included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And welcome to Technocracy News and Trends. Patrick Wood here, Editor-in-Chief, and today is August 20, 2019. And we're going to start out today by saying robots rejoice. In Beijing, China, starting right today, is the World Robot Conference. It's convening over there. 700 robots will be on display. Robots of every type, kind, and function that you can imagine. And you know, when technocrats get together, I guess they build robots. And when robots get together, they strut their stuff and show off for everybody else how wonderful they are. And it's interesting, even though this is in Beijing, China, that the World Robot Conference is called, in English, the World Robot Conference. You can see the sign on the website, technocracy.news. And that's sort of humorous to me, that they're making such a big deal of this. This has been occurring for several years now, and it gets bigger every year. But instead of calling it the World Robot Conference in Chinese, they spell it out in English. That tells you something. I'm not sure what, but it tells me something. Well, the article starts out, cutting-edge robots are on display at the 2019 World Robot Conference in Beijing, running from August 20, that's starting today, to 25, and are expected to attract nearly 200 guests from 22 countries. And I think that is a mistake, a typo. I think it would more likely be 20,000 guests or more. The conference features a series of exhibition areas for new robotic technologies and products, including medical, multi-legged, and smart logistics, as well as four contests with an anticipated 4,500 professional participants. Over 700 robots specializing in more than 21 industrial applications will be exhibited between now and the close of the conference. Among those exhibiting will be HRG Robotics, whose president Wang Meng said, "We will be showcasing a string of successful companies which have got off the ground through the help of HRG, alongside our representative products at WRC 2019. As we aim to form new partnerships with companies around the world." I did not do an investigation on HRG Robotics, by the way, but it wouldn't surprise me if they had some close association with the Chinese technocrat government. The article continues, also on display will be Smart Bird, not Big Bird, Smart Bird, created by German firm Festo, whose design was inspired by the herring gull, and whose flight mimics that of a bird. The ultralight flying drone was created with the best aerodynamic and maximum agility in mind, and it is able to take off, fly, and land under its own power. Well, the rhetoric goes on describing some of the different robots that will be on display, but it is noteworthy that the entire field of robotics is excessing humans at an alarming rate. Jobs are being displaced. People are being moved out for cheaper iterations of their functions. And as they say, robots don't eat, they don't require breaks, and they never complain, and they don't go on strike. But on the other hand, robots are subject to being hacked. They, of course, will break. They're certainly subject to software malfunction. And as new robots come out, they do have to be replaced for competitive purposes, if nothing else. So robots, in the end, may prove to be less valuable than what they're being claimed today. But nevertheless, robots rejoice. This is your week in the sun in Beijing, China. Good luck with that. San Diego is back in the news again. Of course, San Diego wants to be the smartest city in America, and they're working hard at it. They've already installed some 3,000 snooping light poles that see, hear, and notice everything that happens on the street. They're equipped with cameras and microphones and sensors, and they want to put in 1,000 more smart light poles. Well, they're concerned about cyber thieves now, cybersecurity. This is a real puzzle to me. The article starts out, San Diego officials are investing in new technologies to help the city become more advanced. But these innovations create questions about cybersecurity and individual privacy. And yes, they do. On a bustling downtown San Diego street one afternoon, passersby probably weren't thinking about the streetlights or the fact that they have cameras. But one resident, Brian Walker, works at a tattoo shop downtown, took some time to think about it. It's like, what's the purpose? And who's the company that is a third-party source that's doing all this monitoring? And what's their intentions in the first place, he said. Well, those are good questions. Eric Caldwell, Director of Economic Development for San Diego, said it's only the city that's collecting data from the smart technologies, and the intention is to help the city save money and become more efficient. Now, I will pause and say to Mr. Caldwell, do you think we're all that stupid to believe that you are the only one that has access to this data and that your intention really is just to save money and become more efficient? And you've already installed 3,000 of these smart light poles in your city that have high-resolution cameras, high-resolution listening devices. Caldwell said, quote, it's about taking information you already have and putting sensors into the urban environment so you get near real-time data that helps you make better decisions. I'll pause again to say, yes, near real-time data. When 5G comes out, which promises real-time data, your little technocrat world will come alive and be lit up like a Christmas tree in a Macy's department store. The article continues, for example, a smart streetlight can autonomously turn off when it sees no one is around. Now, that's a real useful feature, considering they're all energy-efficient bulbs in the first place. In recent years, the city has installed around 3,000 smart streetlights, with plans to install 1,000 more. Caldwell said the lights can show how many people or bikes go by, what the temperature is outside, or even driver patterns in communities. That's really critical information in understanding how changes we are making in mobility infrastructure is being utilized by the public. But the idea of a smart city doesn't appeal to all. One concern is how the city physically secures data that it's collecting. Darren Bennett, the Chief Information Security Officer for the City of San Diego, was one of the many attending the U.S. Chamber Cybersecurity Conference in San Diego last month. He said the city is always trying to stay ahead on security from a hardware perspective. We follow best practices for security. We have a third-party auditor come in and monitor our work. We also know what our critical data is and protect it accordingly, he said. But, he said, it's impossible to account for every situation. There's no perfect entity. I always joke it's an unfair game. You have a limited number of security professionals and an unlimited number of hackers that are trying to get in, Bennett said. Now I have a question for Mr. Bennett and the city manager. If the data you're collecting is so innocuous, if there's no personally identifying features to the data, it's completely anonymous, you say, it's only metadata, you say, then why would hackers want to get in and steal it? You say you're offering it back to the public for free anyway. Is that worth stealing? What's the problem with cybersecurity then? Or, on the other hand, are you actually collecting data that you're not telling anybody about and saving that data in databases on servers that is of value to hackers? And that's why they're trying to get in. See, this doesn't make sense. Either you have valuable data or you don't. And if you don't have any valuable data, there's no hacker in the world that's going to consider you low-hanging fruit. What's the point? They can't make any money off of it. The article continues, and there's a second concern that was brought up at the same conference. Quote, how are these smart cities of San Diego going to change the way we live And how are we going to be prepared to manage the risk that comes with that? Asked moderator Adam Bolio of consulting company Deloitte. One sentence puts the risk into perspective. It's basically security versus civil liberties. Gordon Romney responded. Romney added, the reality of imperfect security paired with the collection of personal data can create privacy challenges. He said, how do we maintain the sanctity of the individual and their privacy? Back at the city administration building, Caldwell said, San Diego takes both physical and personal security seriously. And he said it does that by not only investing in IT technology that's secure, but also by being cautious about what type of data is being collected in the first place. Well, in my opinion, San Diego is speaking out of both sides of its mouth. It's either collecting data or it's not. Why would people be concerned about private data if there's no private data being collected, as they say? You see, it just doesn't make sense. Yet San Diego aspires to be one of the smartest cities in the country, and it aspires to also be a global city one day, comparable to the likes of London and Paris, Tokyo, and other large cities of the world. So I guess it figures it has to go through all these machinations to get there. In their mind, they're making it safe, you know, for other companies to come and invest money in San Diego. All of the smart city technology is really state of the art, but nevertheless, they're just telling people, the citizens of the city, oh, we're not collecting any important data from you. No pictures, no audio recordings. We're only collecting metadata. The last story is somewhat personally disturbing. The headline is climate shaming. Keto dieters are called irresponsible stewards of the planet. My comments at the top of this article, virtually every major publication in the world is promoting anti-meat rhetoric to save the planet. But now it's getting really personal as keto dieters are pointedly shamed as irresponsible stewards of the earth. This is absolutely incredulous. This was a team of experts that came up with this idea. This article appeared, by the way, in Business Insider, one of those major publications now that's promoting the anti-meat rhetoric. The article starts out, the world cannot run on bacon and butter, aside from the fact that there are not enough pigs and cows on the earth to feed every person in such a high-fat way. This kind of meaty diet is dangerous for both human health and for our planet's future. That doesn't stop people from trying, it states. Eating a keto diet that's especially high in red meat will be undermining the sustainability of the climate, Harvard nutrition professor Dr. Walter Willett told Business Insider. It's bad for the person eating it, but also really bad for our children and our grandchildren. So that's something I think we should totally strongly advise against. It's, in fact, irresponsible, he said. Trendy keto diets are designed to make people run on fat, strictly limiting a person's carbohydrates so that the body switches into a fat-burning state called ketosis. In practice, this usually means no sugar, no wheat, no beans, and very little alcohol. Sometimes it also means a lot of red meat, but there isn't a lot of evidence about whether fueling up on more saturated fats, bacon, butter, and cream are traditionally linked to health conditions like heart disease and higher cholesterol, might harm the long-term health of keto dieters. This hasn't stopped the keto diet market from exploding. Annual keto-friendly food sales are projected to skyrocket to a $12.35 billion market worldwide by 2024, and butter sales, especially of fancy versions like those from grass-fed cows, are on the rise too. Willett says he thinks people can be healthy on a keto diet and that one of the best ways to go high fat may be to model the Greeks. It's pretty easy when you're in some place like Israel or Greece with so many good vegetables and healthy oils and fish to have a pretty healthy low-carbohydrate diet, he said. Both keto aficionados and Willett agree. There's something wrong with the way most people are eating. We could all stand to replace refined carbohydrates like wheat, bread, snack cakes, and sugary drinks with more good fats and fresh produce. But replacing carbs with more saturated fats doesn't always align with a planet-friendly way of eating. Unlike olive oil, many fat sources are sold at room temperature, like bacon fat, butter, beef tallow. They come from animals, not plants. To cultivate those fat sources, farmers need a fair amount of real estate for cows and pigs to roam. A United Nations report released just last week suggests the world's beef-heavy consumption patterns are taking a serious toll on the health of our planet. Food systems are now responsible for 37% of greenhouse gas emissions. By the way, that is a bald-faced lie. And cow manure is a major part of that equation, as it releases large amounts of climate-changing nitrous oxide and methane into the air. Diets that are rich in plant-based food emit lower greenhouse gas emissions than diets that are heavy in red meat consumption, UN report co-author Cynthia Rosenzweig said during a press conference. There are things eaters can do to change that. A report Willett himself authored for the Eat Lancet Commission earlier this year suggested that people around the globe should double the intake of their fruits, vegetables, nuts, and legumes while cutting red meat and sugar intake by at least 50% in order for the globe to remain healthy and well-fed. Now, if this doesn't just aggravate you, you're not awake. And I just want to say how crazy this sounds on the surface of it. It's not crazy at all. The people that promote sustainable development, climate change, global warming, these people will use any conceivable trick in the book to shame you into modifying your behavior. That's what this is all about. The only solution they ever offer is sustainable development, which is a replacement economic system for capitalism and free enterprise. This has been the only economic system, by the way, the world has ever known. Free enterprise was there from the beginning. Even in the Ten Commandments, it says, thou shalt not steal. Well, what would there be to steal if there was no private property? I just want to say, for all the people that tell us how they're so offended by our behavior, I just want to say, I'm offended by all of this nonsense. I'm offended by people who say that I am unable to do my part to be a steward of the planet. I'm tired of people telling me how I should eat and how I shouldn't eat, how I should walk and how I shouldn't walk, how I should get transportation, how I shouldn't get transportation. I'm tired of people telling me that my carbon footprint is too great, that I'm breathing out too much carbon dioxide and I'm harming the planet. I'm offended by people who tell me that the economic system of the Green New Deal is the only way to save the planet, when in fact, any economist with a brain in his head knows that the Green New Deal will destroy the planet once and for all and leave us with a ragged banana republic economic system. It will never work. It has never been tested, but it's absolutely a crackpot economic system that cannot possibly work. And to the extent that it is implemented, the only direction it'll take us in is towards neo-feudalism and back to the Dark Ages, where all wealth and all resources are concentrated in the hands of a very few, an oligarchy. And the rest of us will be lucky if we get to squat on the back 40 to raise a few animals or to raise a little corn to keep our family alive and give 90% to the landowner. Climate change, sustainable development, the United Nations, technocracy, this represents the biggest fraud ever perpetrated in the history of the world, and people are falling for it all over the world. This is a global deception. It's a global delusion. And my friends, it's time for you to stand up and say, you are offended as well, and stop it. Just stop it. We will not buy these lies anymore. If you want to lie to yourself, go stand in front of a mirror and speak to yourself all day long. But don't come out to the world and tell us your lies. We don't want to hear them anymore. And in closing, I will mention again that the United Nations has brought this plague upon the world by impressing it on every local community on the face of our planet. America is riddled with sustainable development doctrine, Agenda 21, 2030 Agenda, New Urban Agenda. All of these policies came from the United Nations. Global warming, all the general plans that are trying to force people out of automobiles and force people into stack and pack housing in downtown areas that are densified now. This is all straight from the bowels of the United Nations. Our local communities are dying because of this. Everywhere this stuff shows up, costs go up, choices go down, property rights are ripped away. We need to stop this, and the only way it's going to be stopped is through local action. Good men and good women simply must get a seat at the table in your local community. And it doesn't matter which table it is. There's plenty of tables. There's the city council table. There's the school board table. There's the water board table. There's the library system. There's the fire board. Plenty of places, plenty of committees to get involved with to be a voice for reason and sanity when these issues come up. And only people who understand it are the ones who will make a difference to perhaps somehow turn the tide back against the United Nations and root some of this stuff out of our nation. I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. We'll see you next time.